Okay, this is Wendy Smith on the 11th of February interviewing Paul Hawes about his life story. Okay, so no gap there now. So if you'd like to tell me about growing up in Burwell from as early an age as you can remember.
Yeah, okay then. I was born in Burwell in 1935. We lived in a little cottage on the riverbank down Riverside. Dad worked at the brickyard and Mother was just a housewife. Dad was born in Burwell. Mother, she never told me, but she told my wife this, that she was delivered to Burwell at the age of five in a horse and cart from the Newmarket workhouse. Anyway, she lived in Burwell and Dad married Dad. And I was born in this little cottage on the riverbank near Judy's Hole, and that's where my earliest memory come from. Must have been about two or three, and just the time when I was asked, Mother used to get me to do little errands, like go and close the door or do this and do that or fetch this, and she asked, round the back of the cottage was Mother's wash house, where she used to do the washing. And the copper, we had a fire underneath the copper for the boiling, for the hot water. And she asked me to run round to see if the copper fire was getting up. And there was always a jam jar full of paraffin beside the fire. When I'd seen Mother, if the fire was a bit dead, you'd throw the paraffin on and it would sort of draw up. So the fire was dead, I threw the paraffin on, and it blew me right out of the copper house. And I can remember being blown out of the copper house and Mother coming run round to see how I was getting on. That cottage was on the riverbank. We had no electricity, anything like that, and our water used to come from the river.
Did you actually clean the water from the river, or just literally...
No. No, it was just, the river was a sort of flowing a little bit, and just used to scoop the bucket in and get water out. And later on, when we was through there, 10, 11, 12, when we used to play around there, the people who lived in the cottage then, it was a hot day, and Eric Wright said, "Do you want a drink?" And we said yes, and we had a glass of river water,
because
that's what they was using. Then, from this little cottage on Riverside, we moved into Powell's Row. Powell's Row is a sort of six-cottage terrace at the Silver Street end of Bunton's Path. And we was there in 1939 because my third brother was born there. And I can remember Father digging the air raid shelter. And I can also remember, that must have been the start of the war, because I can remember the neighbours standing at the gate looking at the aeroplanes to tell us that was a German and that was a Messerschmitt and this was a Spitfire. But and also I remember hearing the air raid siren from that cottage. So about 1940... we moved to a cottage on the Anchor Yard car park, which was in between the Anchor Pub and the Anchor Bridge. And this little cottage had a main room, a big main bedroom, a sort of attic, and a cellar that flooded every year. And we was there till 1948. And in this cottage, again, we had no water, no electricity. Father used to have to fetch the water from 250 yards down towards the Baptist Chapel where the pump was.
And was the pump from the spring?
No.
Or the pump from the river as well?
The pump through the village, there was pumps... different. I think if I count them up, there's about 10 pumps the length of the from the village from a well, And this pump, which I'll just mention, was replaced around about 1940 with what we called a standpipe. That was a sort of big old cast iron tap, and that's where we fetched the water from. And so when Father came home from work, after working in the brickyard all day, he had the job of carting water for Mother and five kids. By the time that we left that house, there was five of us. Third brother and my sister was born there as well. Then we moved from there to the Airy houses at the top of Toys Lane in 1948.
Are they Airy houses made by a Mr. Airy, or was it just?
Yeah, it was the name of we. It was the name of the house, the Airy houses. Every village had them after the war. That was a sort of concrete slab house.
Oh, right.
And that was built by Palmer's and Burwell. And it's Hawthorne Way. That is where the Airy houses were. We moved up there, and Mother had electricity, hot water. It was like
a luxury.
It was a luxury, yes. And I was there until I joined the army in 1953. And that was sort of places I lived in. Then about 1960, after the army, I married Pauline. And I think about 1963, we lived on in Market Road ever since.
So what did you do between when you moved up to the Airy's house and got married?
I went to work at the brickyard when I left school. Well, a little time I worked for the iron and metal man, Mr. Sparks, in the village. Then I went to the brickyard until I joined the army. Joined the army for 3 years, and then I come back and went back to the brickyard until 19. The brickyard closed in 1970, so the job went. So in 1970 or thereabouts, I went with a chap called Ray Webb, and we was partners in the scrap metal business. And I drove a skip lorry for about 20 years until 1993. Then I started the present brickyard up for the Cambridge Historic Buildings Trust to reproduce gold clay products for restoration and conservation work.
Oh, right.
Until I retired in 2000. Yeah, the year 2000 when I retired, yes. 13 years ago.
14 now.
What?
14 now.
Oh, yes, yeah, that's right, yeah. I've been a pensioner for 14 years. Oh, dear. Yeah. Yeah, I'll tell you about the schools now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, when in my school days, Burwell had three schools. We had St Andrew's School at North Street, St Mary's School opposite the church in High Street, and Secondary Modern School, they called it, where the village college is now. And schools, I must have been about five when I had to start school, and Mother took me down on the day, and it was in the infants were in St Andrew's Church, and the schoolhouse was adjoining St Andrew's. The school room and the schoolhouse was adjoining St Andrew's Church. And but the infant class was in the church, and I remember now Miss Clayton, the infant teacher, she the door was open, and Miss Clayton was pulling me, and the Mother was pushing me, and I was screaming. I didn't particularly want to go to school, but I did. And I was at that school during most of the war. I was 10 when the war ended in 1945. So most of me wartime memories come from while I was at that school. Also, we went to the Baptists had a Sunday school which I attended, and also there was at the top of Toys Lane there was another chapel thing. There was an old folks' home, and adjoining that was a hut which they called the Welcome Mission, and they used to have a club once a week for us youngsters. And I lived down North Street. In them days there was not many street lights about, and going to the club about 5 o'clock on a winter's evening, or perhaps a bit earlier, it was daylight, so I could see my way up Toys Lane. And coming out 7 o'clock, half past seven, whatever the time was, it was pitch black, and I dare not go down Toys Lane because Toys Lane had a street light at the top and a street light at the bottom, and the manse and another big house in the middle. There was just hedges and fields all the way down. So I used to run from the top of Toys Lane to the top of the avenue, through the avenue, through the footpath, down to Martin Road. There's a street light in Martin Road, and I used to run down Bunton's Path. I dare not, Swan Alley was too dark, but the next alley, there was a cut called Brooklands, which had a bit of light from the houses at each end. I ran through Brooklands Avenue to the next street light, which was in North Street. There was another street light near Dunnet and Fullard's, and then just down the road and home. And toys that people do not remember or cannot recall how dark the village was. There was only perhaps in the whole village, there was probably only about 10 street lights.
And how old were you?
Probably 10 or 11 at that time.
So what were you frightened of? Just the dark?
The dark, yes. Down the Anchor Yard, we used to have an outside toilet. And if you went into the toilet out in the yard, you used to sit on the wooden seat with a bucket underneath you. And I used to have a bicycle lamp, and there was a window above your head, and I used to shine this torch up there in case anybody come in the window after me. It did.
So it's the fear of the bogeyman, really.
The bogeyman, yeah, that's right, yes. Yeah, but it was so dark, and you just cannot imagine it now, because if all the street lights went out in Burwell, we would still have enough light from Water Beach, Wickensome, Newmarket. You could still see yourself around it. So that was the schools. And then...
So what did you do while you were at school? What's a typical lesson type of thing?
Oh, dear, yes. I was at St. Andrew's School till I was 11. Then I went to the secondary modern school until I was 15. And that was where the college is now. At school, we had... We all sat there at desks, and what did we do? That's a job to remember. Now, Mrs. Sprake was the head teacher, and she had this old spaniel dog which used to share her chair with her.
Took her dog into the classroom?
Yes, the dog sat on her. She used to sit on the front of a chair, and the dog sat behind her. It was a cocker spaniel, a real golden coloured one. And milk time, when we all had a third of a pint of milk each, the dog used to lick the milk tops. And used to take it in turns, holding the milk tops for the dog to lick. Some of the delicate kids were given malt, a spoonful of malt every day. And we just...
What made people think they were the delicate ones to get the malt then?
I think it was... recommended by the doctor, because George Fuller was one I remember. There was two or three kids, every day they had a big spoonful of malt, because there was a bit on the delicate side.
Oh, right.
And then we had books, and we had a pen and an inkwell and a piece of blotting paper. I think we used to make a lot of mess. And that's about all
I can... Did you do, like, geography, history, those sorts of subjects, or was it a general...
At the St Andrew's School, that was during the war, and a lot of it was about the war. We done the tables, we chanted the tables, 2 2's 4 4 4 2. Yeah, we chanted the tables, and we done a bit of writing, that's right. So we done the basics, but a lot of it was the war, the war effort. Every day, one particular thing, I remember in the newspapers, it used to have the Allies this side and the Germans that side and the Russians over there, and there was arrows pointing where the front line was. And it was for days, if not weeks, there's a lot of headlines about trying to get across the Rhine. The Allies, the British and the Americans, has got as far as the Rhine, and there was a hold-up. So I was living down Anchor Yard at the time. The river was just down the road there, about 100 yards. And I walked down to the river and looked at the river, and I thought to myself, what's the problem? I didn't think the Rhine, I didn't know the Rhine was a mile wide. Yeah. And things like that. And then we left that school and went up to the secondary modern school, where we, I don't know what we did learn. We just had basic school stuff, I think. But we had a gardening lesson once a week, the afternoon on the school gardens. And at the St Andrew's School, if that's a nice day, the teacher used to take us for a nature walk down a river. And but getting back to the war, a lot of you have started during the war, and in the school, you could hear the air raid siren. The policeman would come down, if there's an air raid going on, he'd blow his whistle as he biked down the street. Also heard the town crier when I was in St Andrew's School. We had a
So Burwell had its own town crier?
Yes. I think it was our mate Doe. He used to do a paper round, and he used to make ice cream. But he was the town crier, and I actually heard him while we were sitting in St Andrew's School. St Andrew's School that had the toilets were bucket toilets again. I think my dad for 2 or 3 years was helped. I think his job was emptying the toilets. I used to put it out to somebody to do. He'd done it for a year or two.
Where did they empty them? Into a cesspit or...?
No, Dad had one of those sort of tanks on a pair of wheels and empty them in there, and he'd bring it home and bury it.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Oh, along the anchor area? Or?
In our garden down the anchor. We had a big garden with the cottage, which went almost down to the river. And that was the tour of that. And that was just, what else did we do? And the school, you know, the war effort at school, we was always helping the soldiers. Books for the soldiers, we used to collect books for the soldiers. They were collecting rose hips for the war effort, stinging nettles for the war effort. I've only recently found out what they were used for. We used to go collecting them in the evening. We used to think they had big bundles, but I don't think, looking back, it was all that big, because we was only kids. And a lot of us, and we left a big heap in the playgrounds, and they used to be cleared up sort of overnight. Somebody used to come around and collect them. Books for the soldiers.
What was the stinging nettles used for?
They make medicine, I believe. I've only recently found out something like a paracetamol. I'm not really too sure, but it was on one of these here television programs of 1940s Britain or something like that was called, and that's what the Stinger Net was for. Let's see, and the soldiers, when we was at school, we used to see the soldiers parading on them. They were based in the big house opposite called Briarwood. You'd probably have a group of Canadian soldiers there. Then they'd go, and perhaps the Poles would be there. The Americans would be there. Then that was a base for evacuees. And the soldiers used to parade the junction of Silver Street and North Street at the school area was their parade ground. So we used to be in the playground watching the soldiers being drilled. If the Americans come by in the jeeps, or when they was about, we used to call out any gum chum, and we was told to stop. That wasn't the proper thing to do by the teacher. And one thing we used to do, I don't know, us kids knew what was going on, because if we see the Americans chatting up any of the women in the village, we used to run home and tell them up. And we did, yes. And
the gossip machine.
That did, yes. And the Home Guard was about. Dad was in the Home Guard, see, when we lived down the Anchor. And as we never had much hot water, and then he used a cold shave on a Sunday morning, and the blood was running down his face.
Oh.
And mother was getting him dressed for parade, you know, and shoving him out. Yeah, and he had all the uniform, the rifle, and everything down there. That was.
And what was his duty?
Well, I don't know quite what when they went out, what they'd done, but there was a whole. I think there's 50 men in the Home Guard,
right,
as well as all the other, the ARP wardens and different people. Well, during the, we was all issued with gas masks, that's right. And
so are these all the men that were too old or had an occupation that didn't join up?
Some of them, the sergeants, and some of them were too old, had been in the First World War. Father worked at the brickyard, which was a reserved occupation. Charlie Moss worked at the gasworks, which was a reserved occupation, because they've got to keep the gasworks running. They've got to keep the brickworks running because of bricks for rebuild and
after the bombs.
And some of the and another thing during the war, the searchlights. I can remember the searchlights. At night, that they were based on just off Ness Road at Baker Drive, the searchlights. And
and why were the Germans bombing this area?
The bombs, we had some incendiary bombs in High Street around the Whitehorse area, and Ness Road, the cottages which were opposite Manchester now, that was incendiary bombed. But we didn't get the train, which ran from Cambridge to Milden Hall, the Burwell station, then went on to Fordham. In between Burwell and Fordham, that was machine gunned by a German plane. Also, there was a bomb dropped in that area, and it was in the paper that was discovered. And being as that was on the county border, Cambridgeshire and Suffolk, the Suffolk policeman, the Exton policeman, had to deal with it. Also, Newmarket was bombed, and about 19 people got killed, I think, that day.
Right. Is this because of all the soldiers that were around here?
Well, yes. There were soldiers everywhere. Newmarket Heath was a bomber base. They even had to level the Devil's Ditch in one place, so the bombers, when they went off heavily laden with the fuel and ammunition, there was about five or six of them crashed into the ditch trying to take off.
Oh, where it was too high for them?
Yeah, so that was levelled off, and that was Newmarket Heath. There was the Americans had a big base at Bodisham, at Exonon. I was RAF Exonon, which was part of...
Oh, we forgot to turn the clock off today.
Oh, stop it now, John. Was that... Oh, again, of course.
I'll have to remember that again, won't I?
Yeah. You just take some soap, pop that little lid if you don't mind.
Okay. We've also had a look at a photograph of the cottage at the back of the Anchor pub, and there are people in front that are some of Paul's family, and we will be looking later on at some brickwork photographs. Also seen a family tree of Paul's that also denotes the number of his relatives that did work in the brickworks where his father worked, and he subsequently followed on. I'm not going to stop this machine at the moment, just in case it doesn't start going again. I've just described the photograph that you had of the cottage with your family in front of it.
Oh, that was that one there, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, we'll get them out again if we've got time or some other lawyer. Right, we were talking about wartime and the school. So that's just most of my school memories of what happened in the war. We was in the playground one day when a lorry came and took all the, smashed all the ornamental railings up in front of houses for the war effort. They also took the ornamental railings from the churchyard, which were around gravestones. And one person said, I remember, he said, they're robbing the dead to kill the living.
That's quite true, wasn't it?
It was, yes. Yeah. Yes, and that was another part of the war effort. And...
What about the refugees? Did the refugees come to your school?
The evacuees. Yes, there was lots of evacuees in the village. I was evacuees living next door to me here with the Ironses. There was lots of them down in the village. I was actually talking about to somebody over the doctors today about Bertie Woods and his sister June. I think her name was June. Trouble is, this is, 60-odd years ago, something like that. Evacuees, the Sparkses, the Plippladdies, the Pooks.
Yeah. And were they all from London?
Yes. The Plippladdies and the Pooks came into Brawood as a family. I think the Plippladdies moved to Chester, and the Pooks stopped around here for... I think there's still some around. They moved to Swaffham Prior.
Oh, right.
And there's others. And we have different times had events down the museum when evacuees have turned up and told us about their time in a village. My would that be my step-aunt? So the person who fostered mother had three daughters whom mother used to look on as her older sisters, and they was all evacuated this way from Ashford during the war.
And so when they came, did they double up the classroom numbers, or...?
Oh, yes, they was in classrooms, yes. I remember I looked on her as my cousin, Jean. I used to see her... Yeah, and the classes... they wouldn't actually doubled up. I don't think they had a limit on the class sizes either. One time, we had two teachers, Miss Claydon and Mrs. Sprake. And one time, Mrs. Clayton, or one of them, was ill. So one class went to school in the afternoon and the other class went in the afternoon. We'd done it on shift work.
And what did mothers say to that then?
I don't see, mothers were at home all the time then. That it was completely different. Not too many women went out to work. Mother didn't. She'd done a little bit flower cutting and things like that, but she never worked during the... She was a housewife and... It was a blinking full-time job, I should think, looking after five kids with no...
No heating and no water.
No, it's... but we never went hungry, and we always had a warm bed to get into, and talking about beds, you know. The winters, we keep saying that's cold now, but they were cold then because bedtime... In this little cottage down the anchor, we just had a cast iron grate to keep the whole house warm. And bedtime, we used to go to bed nearly dressed, and we had all this here blankets and overcoats on us. And Mother used to put bricks in the oven during the day, so we had wrapped them in a blanket for a hot hot water bottle, hot brick. The winters then, the river was frozen up for weeks. Men of the village used to go skating in the moonlight. And icicles, you know, you used to go to school, you see icicles hanging off buildings, you know, several inches long. And at nights we used to throw a bucket of water down to make ourselves a slide next morning.
So if your cellar flooded, was it flooding in the winter? Or...
No, it was a winter. There were springs coming up at the garden gate, and the river. See this? Thinking about it, when the river was a lot higher than what it is now, so the river was up there, and our cellar was about there. So the rainwater,
is just there.
So when the river went down, the cellar went down. So
you didn't use the cellar much then?
We used it in the summertime as a pantry and stores, because with that single room, which is, I don't think it's quite as big as this, everything had to be stored in there. Our shoes were stored under the couch or the sofa, we called it, and everything. His dad came home wet through, and you know, his clothes had to be dried in there. Mother had the wash house where she had line, but in them days too, lines were full of nappies. They're not disposable like they are now. And I've seen nappies on the lines frozen stiff like boards. Yes. So it's
cold when you're getting changed.
The present those ladies don't know how easy they got it. Yes. So that was that. And going back, the doctor, Dr. Engine was our doctor, and if Mother wanted to take us to the doctor, she never made an appointment. She just took us right up the top end of the street. Enyon, the doctor's was at what we called Enyon's Corner. That's the entrance to Isaacson Road up the top end of the street, and that's where the doctor's was. And if we went to the doctor's, and if we had to go to the hospital, we had to get on the bus to go to Addenbrooke's. My sister cut her hand on a jam. The leader in her little finger on a jam jar when she was licking the jam out, and she fell over and cut herself. And I remember my sister having to go to Addenbrooke's and Mother taking her.
Oh, on the bus with the finger bleeding?
No, her finger had been healed up by then. But that was to put the leader right. But talking about that now, I was talking to a farmer at Quarry who cut his fingers badly in a grinder machine, which was grinding an animal feed up, a wassail grinder. And his mother had to take him to Addenbrooke's Hospital. And how she done? She took him from the farm, which was Croy, down to Bottisham Station, trained to Cambridge, then up to Addenbrooke's Hospital. There was no ambulance come running in them days. Yes. So
did his fingers get saved, or...?
Oh, I think the reason we was talking about it, he had bits and pieces missing off his hand. This was years ago I was talking to him, but that's how you got to hospital. We had a district nurse who lived in the nurse's house, the War Memorial House. And when I got my brother's fingers in the mangle...
Lovely.
It was pouring with blood, so mother took him up to the district nurse to sort him out of it. Yes.
So, what, you were mangling and his fingers went through?
Yeah, we were playing, yes, and his fingers went in. And talking about, well, get on to doctors and nurses now, you know, kids, us kids and all other kids had everything wrong with us, like measles, mumps, chicken pox, yellow jaundice, pink eye, and... things you don't hear. Whooping cough, yes, whooping cough. And there's all sorts of remedies for this. One whooping cough was a fried mouse.
Lovely.
And people won't believe me. I was talking to a sister from one of the Liverpool hospitals about this, and she sort of laughed at me. And until I found references in two local books about children being given fried mice as a cure for whooping cough.
So, did you eat it or wrap it around
really
your chest?
Remember.
Or?
I can't really remember. I know we all had whooping cough. We all had that. We all had mumps. We all had measles. Pink eye. Have you ever heard of pink eye?
Is that conjunctivitis?
Could have been, yeah, could have been another yellow jaundice we had.
I haven't heard of yellow jaundice.
Yeah, but...
Smallpox?
No, we didn't had chicken pox. There was lots of...
Scarlatina.
A scarlet fever.
Yeah, scarlet fever, was it?
Yeah,
I can remember my dad and his family had something, because they had a double bed.
Yeah.
And all five of them slept in the double bed.
Yeah.
And he said that Uncle Fred had it, and it ended up with Uncle Bob.
Yeah.
As it just went up and down the children.
Yeah, there was one fever which they went to the fever hospital at Exonan, a special isolated hospital there. And if you look in the old burial records, lots of families lost people in the... that says place of death, the fever hospital, Lexington. So there was a lot of people. There were several out of Powell's Row who died of that. But I can't remember anybody who I knew who died of it. But that was probably a bit before my time.
And all those diseases, then you'd stay at home and mum would...
That's right, yes. In the old room, father went to the boys' school, which is a present Guild Hall, and looking at old records of that, that said Reginald Hall sent home with whooping cough, and about a week later, that had Reginald Hall returned to school too early, sent home again with whooping cough.
All right.
So
they were strict then.
There was, yes. We were talking about the... I'll talk about the shop, shall I?
Yes.
Yeah. The shops... we lived just the Anchor Yard, and our nearest shop, well, one either side. One was Hobbs' shop, which was opposite the Baptist Chapel. Alec Hobbs' shop. Another one... Dunnett and Fuller's, which was opposite the entrance of Burwell House. Most of Mother's provisions came from Hobbs' shop. She'd go down there and almost daily to get there. You wouldn't do like you go now, go to Tesco's, get a trolley full and make it last a week or a fortnight. You'd pop in there daily and it'll be jotted down on a book and should pay at the end of the week. And everything, almost everything we go to Tesco's for, now you're able to get from this shop, besides a lot of other stuff. Like if you was making anything, a rabbit's hutch or something like that, you'd be able to get a pound of nails or paraffin for your stoves and leather to mend your boots with. And all this come from that little shop. That was Hobbs's shop, down at Fuller's. At the bottom of Factory Road was Owen Warren, who was another little grocer. He sort of looked after that end of the street. In between the Anchor Pub and the Baptist Chapel was Freddie Bignall, the baker. He used to bake bread. Oh, my goodness, you can smell it now. When he opened his ovens and all this freshly baked bread, you could smell in North Street. It was marvellous. And Mrs. Bignall used to run a service for people. If you had a Yorkshire pudding or anything like that, she'd pop it in a hot oven for about cost a penny or something like that.
And what, charged the villagers to use the oven?
Round about, yeah. Of course, after bread had been taken out, so they'd be baking bread from about 5 o'clock in the morning. Come 9 o'clock, the ovens were still hot. They'd be hot enough to put a Yorkshire pudding in or whatever. So I've often went round Mrs. Bignall's with a Yorkshire pudding or something to put in the oven. And I believe that was also used to cook different people's Christmas turkeys in there. So, yes. So that was Fred the baker. The milkman used to deliver every day. He was Charlie Bridgman, and his dairy was, oh dear, up in North Street, just before you get to the co-op. And he kept his cows in a meadow beside the wreck. So did Bill Guyot, who was further up the causeway, in another meadow just near the wreck. And every morning, I used to, after milk the cows, take them down in the meadow, be there all day, then fetch them home in the evening and milk them again. And they'd sort of stay all night at the dairy, then every morning they'd be back to the meadow. So the village in between Charlie Bridgman's and the meadow and Gart's and the meadow was cowpats all the way.
Lovely.
All the way. Yes, and that was the milkman. And
and did he deliver in his jug or
he was bottled by that time? Bottles then. I think Horry Berlin was another milkman. He was on Ness Road. I think there's photographs of him delivering with a jug. A ladle of a milk churn. And that was, so we've done the bread. Shoes, there was a shoe shop, the Central Shoe Stores, which was opposite, it's Myrtle Drive now, is that in that area? That was the Central Shoe Stores. The co-op.
Oh, it was has always been there?
As always, as far as I can remember, yeah. An early photograph shows it as a thatch roof place. And groceries was one side, and there's a bit of a drapery counter the other side. That was a co-op. Next door to that was Mrs. Bridgman's. That was a grocer's. Opposite that was the butcher's, Goldsmith, which is now the Cost Cutter, is it?
Oh, yes.
That was Goldsmith, the butcher's. And further up the street, there was more butchers and that. I think in the village, there was four or five, if not six butchers. There was Lane's, two or three bakers, and the little shops, the grocer, I think there could have been eight, nine, perhaps ten of those. I've never got round to counting those. Pubs. We had 11 pubs at 11. that time. We're down to three, I think, now. Starting from when I was a schoolboy, starting from North Street, we had We had the Maze Head, the Rose, the Anchor, the Queen's Arms, the Bushel, the Fox, the King William, the Crown, the Five Bells, and the White Horse. And we also had the British Legion, which is ex-service club there. So with that, those 11 pubs. And but people don't go to the pub much now, so they all sit down there watching television. Mm. Yes. And we also had different people come round. Effie Brown used to come round with a van with paraffin and all sorts of sort of hardware stuff, mugs you could buy, pots and pans that was all hanging on the side of this van.
Right.
She used to come round, and a greengrocer used to come round. I think he used to come from Swaffham Prior, and I think his name was Claude Buttress, but I'm not sure about that. And the paper boy used to deliver papers. I had a paper around when I was a sort of schoolboy down North Street. And in them days, you knew everybody who lived in the village. Now you don't know people who live up this road.
No.
It's terrible. But that is the shops.
Did you have any electrical shops or?
Oh yes, yeah. Bicycles, yeah, too. We had Vizier bicycle shop on the Causeway. His son Ron was an electrical man where you could buy electrical stuff. Doe's, another bicycle shop, which was opposite the King William pub. So we was all right for bicycles in the village. And other, like Harry Norton, who worked for Vizier's, if you had a gramophone, for instance, which broke, the spring was broken, he could fix that for you. Also down in North Street, there's an old tinker, Ike Fabian, who used to mend pots and pans. If you had a leak in saucepan during the war, you couldn't buy a new saucepan. Of course, there's none available. So you take it to him and he used to solder it up and things like that. And, yes.
I don't know if I fancy that.
And I did. And also, a leak in pot and pan, there was a sort of... It was like two washers and a cork with a nut and bolt through.
All right.
You put one side, the piece of cork... And the washer the other side, and the nut and bolt through everything and tightened it up. There is some of those down the museum now. Pot menders or something they call them.
Clothes, you didn't mention clothes.
Clothes.
Yeah, dress shops and...
Yeah, Connie Dazzle.
All right, nice name.
Connie Dazzle. It was... The shop now is the estate agent now at the top of Dazzle's Lane.
Oh, the something in Armitage.
Yeah. That was Connie Dazzle's shop, and you could get almost anything you wanted out there. You didn't want too much. It sort of, there was no designer jeans in them days, and that's a pair of boots from a central shoe store was okay. A jacket from Connie Dazzle's was okay, and that was a clothes shop. And the co-op used to sell a bit of drapery too.
Wool? Did you get a wool shop?
Oh, yes, there was. Mrs. Fordham. Oh, dear, yeah. Mrs. Fordham. But that was opposite the central shoe stores. That was in the area of Myrtle Drive, is it, in North Street? And there was another little shop there, the chemist. He was there for a little while. There was an electrical shop there, which the old radios used to have an accumulator which had to be charged up once a week. So we used to take them up to, I think the chap's name was Knights, take an accumulator up there, put it on charge, you'd pay sixpence and that keep your radio going for the next week. Down the Anchor, we never had a radio, we never had a clock, we never had much. And we never had a clock, so I had to go to the Anchor pub and look in the window and tell Mum the time. And I couldn't tell the time, so I used to say the big hand's on 5 and the little hand's on 7, which really meant 5 to 7. And she knew it was time for me to go to school. As far as I remember now, Dad's mates used to call down and give him a shout that it was time to go to work at the brickyard. And so we never had any clocks. And we never had a radio until I was about... Oh dear, that was before we left the Anchor, so that would be about 1946, 1947. When Grandmother Badcock had an insurance out, so they brought themselves a new electric radio, and we had their old battery radio. And that was when we used to be able to listen to Dick Barton, Special Agent, and Donald Pierce singing. Yes, yeah. So that was...
better off without the radio.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was... other thing I've got down here is playtime. What we used to do as kids to amuse ourselves... There was no play areas with chutes and slides and that. We used to go down the fen and climb trees and make camps. And on the way to school, play hopscotch. There was hopscotch squares all over the pavement on the way to school. And when we got in our camp, we would make catapults and bows and arrows. And we used to go out. We had all the meadows to play in. We had all the fen to play over. The rivers to play on. We used to, sometime during the war, aircraft petrol tanks appeared. So the top was cut out to make a little canoe.
All right.
So we used to play on the river with them. And our camps, we used to, school holidays, which was 6 weeks, and we used to go out in the mornings and not come back till 5 o'clock. We'd go birds nesting, and our camps, it was all thatched inside, you know, lovely things. Looking back, perhaps I'd look at them now, you think it's a heap of rubbish, but it did. And
would it be a gang with
The North Street gang? Yeah.
Oh, right, so it'd be your lot would,
yeah, and there was, I don't know, perhaps 10 or a dozen kids, a little group of us, and we'd go and with our sixpence a week pocket money, we'd be able to buy a small loaf of bread, which was twopence halfpenny, and a bottle of Garnet's mineral water, which was threepence halfpenny, makes a sixpence. We'd take it down our camp, and we used to perhaps find some eggs from Jim Peach's hens, which had laid away, and have eggs and bread and all this. Also, different times, one or two times, the soldiers, when they used to park in Silver Street, which was just a dirt track, the convoys, several times they used to park up there and camouflage up. And when they went next morning, you'd probably, a few weeks later, find a tin of sardines, which they'd left in the head. So we used to take it down our camp. And another awful time thing, silver paper... There was a name for it. That was something to do with radar. The planes used to drop it, and this is strips of silver paper used to lay all over the fields, and we used to collect all that up and make it into...
Was that dropped by the Germans or dropped by the...
I think it was dropped by us.
Oh, right. Yeah. So what would that do for the radar, for the...
I'm not really sure. There is a name for it now. I can't remember offhand until I look it up. And that was something to do with the war. You'd see it all over there. There'd be strips of it hanging on the hedges. And apparently that was dropped to either divert the raid or do something. And
You'd make...
We'd make things.
Decorate with the tin foil?
It was like strips of... tinfoil, that was. You can make Christmas decorations out. Or you could hang it on your Christmas tree to decorate it up and that, because there was no no electric lights on Christmas trees. No, we had candles. That's the one you didn't set the house on fire. You had a clip with a little candle holder on, and you put a candle in it. Yes, that's what was on the Christmas tree in them days. And yes, so that another thing we used to do is make rings out of Perspex. Perspex was the windscreen of an aeroplane, and there was bits and pieces that available. Don't know where that come from. That's probably a plane crash somewhere. But you could cut it and you could carve it and make a ring out of it, or a woggle for your...
For your scout tie, yes.
Yeah, and that was that. Really forget where we got to now. You have playtime. So we used to play down, and we used to go down the old pit down, which was down North Street, and dig caves, and really have an enjoyable time when we were kids. Bird's nesting we used to do. We used to collect hundreds of eggs, or wish we hadn't have done, but we did. There'd be a gang of us, and you say first egg, second egg, and we'd be but the hedgerows then were teeming with bird's nests. There was all sorts of bird's nests. And Judy's Hole, before that got filled up by the sewer, I think it was about the late 60s or early 70s, when they put the sewer through the village, all the topsoil went to fill Judy's Hole up. Before then, the swans used to nest in there, and they went off when they hatched the cygnets out to the river, and there was an egg left in the nest, which is in the museum now. It was in my brother's egg collection, and swan's egg's about that big, and it was rotten, and my mother blew that for him. You blow on an egg, you put a hole in each end and blow all the yolk out, so you just got the shell. Oh. And I can see her now on her hands and knees, what mothers used to do for us boys, blowing this here egg for him. Yep. And so that was our school playground. Talking about mother again, 1948, before we left the Anchor Yard, the King and Queen came to Burwell. That had been about 1947, probably.
What's that?
No, earlier. That was for the war effort. The King and Queen came to Burwell, perhaps 1945, 46, because they were reclaiming Burwell Fen. And that was a procession. A loudspeaker car came through Burwell, and that said, "Make way for the King and Queen. Please keep your coal carts on the side of the road. Make way for the King and Queen." And they went to Burwell Fen, and there is photographs of them talking to the workers down Burwell Fen. That was about 1948, when the National Health Scheme started. Mother realised she was going to get an extra pound a week, because there was five of us children, and I didn't get anything because I was the oldest, but the next four got 5 shillings each, which made a pound. And I can hear Mother saying there, "Whatever will I do with an extra pound a week?" It was a fortnight, a pound like buying ice cream with it, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was what we used to do as kids. And we used to play football and that. And another thing, going to school, we used to bowl a hoop to school and leave that in the playground. All us kids had a hoop each other. And the hoop wasn't... Some had a real proper wooden hoop. But my hoop was just a bicycle wheel with all the spokes knocked out, and just the rim, yeah.
So that was the modern-day, I've got to have toy.
Yeah, it was, yeah. And catapult. We all had a catapult and bow and arrow and things like that. And...
Did you kill anything with your bow and arrow? Or?
No, I don't think we did. The bow and arrow, the sort of willow bow and a piece of string, the arrows were usually made out of reeds. You'd get a nice stiff, and a piece of elder on the top. If you get a piece of elder and the pith, you can take the pith out and stick your reed under that. That made the air. I don't think it was killed. One or two of the lads had air guns, air rifles, but I didn't, so... Right, now, I've talked a lot about the wartime, haven't I? Now, talking about helping on the farm, I've got written here.
Yeah.
When I was down North Street, I was just at the Anchor Yard. Mr. Greenall owned the farm the opposite side of the road, and I spent many, many hours up in his farmyard. In fact, my greatest ambition to be, when I left school, was to be a farmer. A proper farmer with chickens round the back door, pigs in the sties, and cattle and horses and that. But I didn't realise how much things were going to change. Mr. Greenall still had horses, he had pigs, he had cows and chickens. So I spent many hours washing eggs before the eggs was collected. I'd muck the pigs out, I used to help feed the pigs, feed the cow. A horse, so I used to do all his horse raking during harvest time. I left there at 1948, I was 13. From about 11 onwards, I was working with a heavy horse as a schoolboy. I was able to harness it up, and I wasn't big enough to put its collar on, because you put a collar on upside down for shove its head, and when you get it over its ears, you turn it over, and that fits on its neck. And so I used to take the horse up to the manger and put a bowl of oats in the manger. The horse used to go up, and I was standing in the manger to put the horse's collar on. Its britchens, the back strap affair, I was able to drag over its backside. The saddle, I go sort of push and pull and get that on. And the cart, I used to back that into the cart, and by being able to, it was fairly well balanced, but being able to lift the cart up, I was able to drop the set stick up so the shafts stood parallel. Then I was able to harness the horse up, or the rake. So I was able to do all his horse raking. Sometimes they were short of wuzzles or mangles. I would take the horse down to the load side.
And what's a wuzzle or a mangle?
Well, so a mangle is a sort of fodder beet. It's a bit... It's animal feed. It's similar to a turnip, which the mangles, they call them. We call them wuzzles.
Oh, right.
And there is a machine which is referred to as a wuzzle grinder, which... used to slice them up like they're chips. I used to go down and get a load of wuzzles for that. Put the pig meal in, like sugar beet pulp, had to be soaked overnight. I was able to do all that. And thrashing time, mother used to let me have time off school to take the chaff off the thrashing drum. That was a dirty, dusty old job, but I used to enjoy it. And what else did I do? I'd been shot. I've done all the jobs.
And where did you take this once you'd done it all?
This here chaff. It used to come. Chaff is, if you can imagine wheat, the kernel is inside sort of husks, isn't it?
Yeah.
And if you rub it, you get your wheat and you get your husks. Well, the thrashing drum sorts that out. It goes over sieves and through fans, and the husks as a chaff, it all comes out of a chute into sacks. And wheat chaff was used for horse feed, and barley chaff was just took on the field and burned. But the wheat chaff was bagged up and put in a chaff house up on the farm, to feed the animals.
Oh, in the winter?
In the winter, yeah. Well, horses used to have a lot of the time, because it was what, I don't think it was very nutritious, it was what they called fill belly. You have to, the bulk of the mash was chaff, and then that used to have the oats and the beet pulp and all the other linseed cake and everything else in it. But the main
ingredients
were what they just to fill the horse's belly up, sort of thing. Yeah. So that was that. And another thing at school.
Did you get paid for that?
Yes, shilling an hour was just he used to pay me, and that was a fortune. See, some weeks I'd earn £2, and I used to, and being down the fen, it was lovely. And Mr. Greenall, well, he's been dead fair well now, but he used to be a bit of a boss. He used to like the fen, he used to love the fen, and some of the sunsets we see across the fen. And one particular sunset we was down there drilling, I was driving a tractor. Now, four tractors preceded a horse, so I was able to drive a tractor then before I left school. And it's his sunset, and we was just about getting finished. It was that dark for the last round that he was dropping white fertiliser down to make a mark for me to drive up.
All right.
And this is sunset, and he said, I'll give £50 for a picture like that, especially if it has two ducks flying across it. And, yeah, so that was...
So you went home and painted one.
No, I wish I could have done. But we had some marvellous sunsets down there. And...
So what did you do with your £2?
I don't know.
Did you have to give any to your mum?
Not until I left school. Oh, see, I always had plenty of money. I had a paper round, and I know that only was three and sixpence my paper round was. That was only a Sunday morning one. But, and £2, and I always had tons of money. You know, I don't know what I'd done with it. I didn't spend it on cigarettes, because I never smoked a cigarette in my life. But I don't know.
Right. But you haven't hidden it in a tub somewhere.
No. But So that was that's on the farm, and I really did, and I loved that farm that much. Just the sort of traditional farmyard, and I was brought up amongst it, because North Street in them days, I was thinking there was about 20 little farmers down there, all employing two or three men each. Greenall's had 4 or 5 men. There's Les Fuller, John Fuller, Des Butler. I bet it's funny, I mean, they come up. Always men about there. Charlie Badcock, who was a stockman. And it wasn't a very big farm either, you know, perhaps 120 acres or something like that. But all the way down North Street, there was little farms. And but things have really altered, so that has helped on the farm. The only other thing, how are we doing for time?
We probably ought to stop. We've just done over the hour.
Have we?
Yes.
Well, next time we can...
Yeah, so I'll finish here and we'll make another date.
Yeah. We can do them. The brickworks next time.
Yeah,